So just befriend the weak. And break another heart this And welcome to This Week in Wrestling Indies International. I'm Pete. I'm with Timothy. Timothy, what's going on?
Oh, same old, same old. Just getting through it. I think, I'm just getting better. I think you're not sick, but seeming under the weather. Had a long week. How you feeling, Pete?
Yeah, just tired, man. We did a re-grand opening at the store. We're just working a lot of hours. And my body's just feeling the burn. And stuff. So hopefully after Sunday I'll have some beers and watch some football, and then everything will go back to normal. What about you, Tim? Man, how's everything going in life in general?
Life is going good. Being sick sucks. It's been messing with my ability to work out because I've been coughing like crazy whenever I try to. But whatever. otherwise, been pretty good. Yeah, man.
That's good. Well, You heard about the Janela incident, right? How he hurt himself.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a shame. It really is a shame. But, you know, the risks these guys are taking, I hate to be I told you so. I'm a guy who likes Janela's work. But, you know, he was like a ticking time bomb waiting to happen on an injury. All the bumps. I mean, I've seen the guy live probably about 7 or 8 times now. And it just you're like awe-dropped by some of the insane bumps he takes. And it could be in front of 50 people, it could be in front of 200 people, it could be in front of 1,000 people. And it caught up to him. And I mean, it's just like, it's what I say, you know. I mean, you don't be taking huge bumps. Doesn't make them. It makes them something memorable at the time in the moment. But it, in the grand scheme of things, that's not how you're a great worker, or it doesn't define your legacy as a worker. I'm sure Cactus Jack, I mean, he might go back and would regret taking some of those bumps in front of the small crowds that he did and saved them up for when it really mattered, where he can make some serious coin out of it. But, God, I mean, there's people who say, well, you know, to me, it's up to the wrestler they can do. But you know what? That's easier said than done. I mean, I'm sure in hindsight, maybe Janela wish you obviously would not have taken that certain bump or taken that whatever happened to him. It's just a shame, and that's what wrestling's coming to is these guys are missing 6, 8 months, a year and a half, or in long stretches of times. I mean, in the territories back in the 70s, 80s, where these guys are working every freaking day. They weren't missing them. I mean, yeah, there were injuries. Don't get me wrong. I don't want to say there never were. But people weren't missing as much now as they were back then. And there's more injuries now than there were back then because they worked smarter. But could tell a compelling story without having to almost murder yourself with all these bumps and stuff. But it's a shame because Janela is one of the good guys who cares. And for a guy who's a student in the game, you think maybe he would. I hope he comes back and works a little smarter. What about you? What's your take on the whole thing?
Well, I hear people worried about him taking time off and all that, but I mean, this run into him becoming such a big time star all kind of started off with him coming back from injury with the stuff with Zandig from TOD. So I think he could do something similar to that again, come back reinvigorated with more hype after having the crowd get to miss him for a while. Hearing people concerned about him coming back too early, which is always a concern with wrestlers, especially. It's not just about, you know, being on the shelf and not making money.
Because they don't have insurance. So,
right.
I mean,
yeah, it's like you're not making money, you're on the shelf. Plus, some guys just want to get back in the ring because they miss it, you know, on top of
it's a drug. It's a drug.
It's, I mean, when it becomes your lifestyle on top of that, like you're addicted to it for what you get from it. It's your livelihood, and it's the pattern and the way that you live your life. Without it, it feels like what's, you know, imagine
how you define yourself. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, imagine if you just didn't have your job. You know what I mean? Like, you just didn't go to work. Like, it's not exactly the same because you don't get the endorphin rush from being at work that they get. That people
I can equate it to when I blew my knee out playing football in high school, and I was a recruited. I was a recruited athlete coming out of going into where I was. The guy who ended up replacing me because my knee injury was like ended up ending my football career. He ended up playing in Notre Dame, so and that was my backup. So, and he maybe he had more tools. I mean, I don't know, but I mean that's to show what type of. I mean, I was a top end, top flight tight end in high school football, and would have been recruited and gotten a scholarship at a big school if I didn't blow my knee out. And I mean, that just ruined it for me. But I can understand it because I mean, like when I injured myself playing football, I didn't have a physical thing to do, and so for me, my first instinct was to lash out in school, and that was. To be disruptive in class because I didn't have an outlet, and I ended up having to. I ended up having to join the debate team, which is a completely different thing than being an athlete. But it was something I can at least compete in with a bad knee. And I was literally on the shelf for. I mean, I blew it out my sophomore year. I ended up a year and a half rehabbing it to where I could at least play basketball my senior year. So that's I can understand to that front on losing something like that, but it's still not the same because these guys, I mean, you know, they're not getting paid a whole hell of a lot of money on the indies. And some make decent money, don't get me wrong, but they're addicted to the pop, and that's why they take those bumps.
Yeah, and like I said, it becomes your life. I mean, for them, it's like if, you know, if not just that it's the pops and the sports, like comparing it to football, but also that they're on the road, they're traveling the world, they're seeing all these people, they're meeting all these people, they're hanging out with everyone. It's like their social circle, it's what they do with all of their free time, basically, like all of their time, a lot of them in general. So, yeah, it's a lot to miss. So, hopefully he doesn't come back too early. Hopefully he... is able to make this parlay this into bigger stardom like he did last time he was out with injury. And I mean, toning it down, I agree. I 100% yeah, like he should tone it down just from the aspect of not getting injured.
But and I'm using him as the example now because he's the current topic guy, but I mean I think the whole entire industry needs to tone it down.
Yeah, that's for sure. And I mean, in some ways it feels like he has been toning it down. I mean, especially you look at the stuff he's been doing in Evolve, focusing more on actually wrestling. It feels like in PWG he's having matches that deliver more in the kind of wrestling and psychology end of things and not just in the freak show spot fest, crazy psycho stuntman bumps. And then it just shows it doesn't matter what you do, this stuff can just happen. I mean, that plancha to the floor, pretty big, but not insane. You know, I don't think anyone would... I think it was super crazy the way that he did it, and it just happened the way that he landed, you know. So I don't know.
And it could be, you know, I'm sure it had a lot. I mean, I bet you a lot of it had to do with the way he landed, but you know, a lot of it probably because of his wear and tear on his body throughout, and this is just one. It right. breaks, you know, if if your body starts breaking down, and then you know, I mean, it makes it easier, more susceptible to injury if you're taking these insane bumps.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's part of it too, obviously. So hopefully moving forward, he'll be doing better here soon, be back, and hopefully he can keep going for the long haul, especially because he does kind of right now feel like the guy on the indies. So
the dude has enough charisma to carry. That's the thing. The guy, people care about him. He has charisma. Stone Cold Steve Austin didn't make a career out of taking insane bumps and didn't become a multi-millionaire, billionaire, or whatever. I might be overstating my billionaire, but he definitely became a millionaire. Basically because of he was over. Joey Janela would get the same reactions by doing less on the indies because he's a good promo, he has charisma, and he connects to the crowd, which again are the most important aspects in wrestling. If you're able to connect to that crowd, and so I mean, he doesn't necessarily need to do all that stuff. He could, you know, he could work a very good psychology based match and stay over because of his charisma and his natural connection that he has with the audience.
Yeah, no, definitely.
It's a shame on that part. I guess Matt Riddle debuting, working with Hiro on the NXT circuit. So that's kind of, we've both kind of like speculated that they might, that might be a match on the next NXT show. So I can see that going in that, for sure going in that direction. Would you say?
Yeah, that feels likely. And then, you know, breaking right now as we're recording, just to give away the time that we're recording, more Chris Hero and NXT house show stuff. The Kings of Wrestling had a little reuniting tease on a NXT house show just a little bit ago here with Cesaro showing up in NXT to help Chris Hero with the Undisputed Era. So that's interesting. We'll see what that means, if anything, you know, moving forward. They already had a they had a match before with the Kings of Wrestling in kind of like an NXT in the past against Seth Rollins and CM Punk, and that didn't really end up being anything. So we'll see if this is ends up being anything or not.
Anything else in the headlines you saw that was interesting?
No, nothing really that I've seen going around too much lately. Yeah.
All right, well then let's just get right into it. Let's look at MLW. Fusion episode 23, and it opens up with Conan and the Lucha Brothers doing a promo. Selena comes out with Rocky Martinez. Why bring out the biggest jobber in your crew? Honestly, I mean, I just her crew looks so weak sauce compared to Conan and the Lucha Brothers, and this kind of felt like a segment that felt like it was on Raw. It felt like it went too long. It really didn't mean a whole hell of a lot in the grand scheme of things, because they've already explained the story, and now you have a doing it live. Yeah, the Lucha Brothers sided with, and then they tried to do way too inside baseball with the Paul references and signing of contracts, like she was the WWE representative. You know, none of the fans are going to buy that bullshit. What do you think of this?
Yeah, I mean, I think everyone knows that MLW doesn't have any ties to NXT, WWE, anything like that in any way. So I'm with you. Pretty much everything Conan in the modern era, the guy, like a lot of his stuff just comes across dated, like very dated, very cheesy to me.
I don't know who to blame, Conan, or do I blame Court on this one? This stuff, yeah, I mean, very...
It's all of them. Yeah, it's all of them. But I'm just saying, Conan as a big picture, like nothing he's in does, comes across good, even outside of MLW. And then you add in everything else, and it's just.
And he's kind of too old to be playing this hip, cool character, you know?
Yeah, I think that's a big part of it too, for sure. And just the Lucha Brothers. I mean, the rumor out now that they're not leaving, and then this feels like, yeah, like this is playing off of that, which. Then becomes
literally
kind of,
yeah
it's just, it's way too inside for people who are just like casual wrestling fans.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, either say small fry and do these type of inside references for all the hardcores, and that's fine, that's all you have hope for. But this is MLW and they're on TV. I'm sure that's not their end game. Their end game has become a pretty big deal. And so you need to drop the inside baseball, small fry, TNA light bullshit. Then we get the Dirty Blondes and Pero versus Davey Boy Smith, Pillman Jr., Teddy Hart, with pretty much Lucha Rules. Pretty much it was just a match kind of with real no psychology really to it. Bunch of big moves, big spots, big moments, and then Pero ends up getting kicked out of the group, so which no one gives a shit about because no one cares about Pero. Overall, I mean, I thought the Hart Foundation looked good. because they got to pull good all their big moves in, but no one gives a shit about this breakup at all. I mean, so it's like kind of like the tree falling in the woods with no one being around, because I don't think no one cares. What do you think?
Yeah, and I even didn't really think that the Hart Foundation looked good, if I'm perfectly honest. I mean, they looked sloppy at times, off, not on the same page, which was interesting because then the storyline plays into the other team having issues and breaking up. But you got Brian Pillman Jr. getting up on the top rope, and then he's just standing there for what seems like an eternity. It was probably like, you know, 20 seconds or something like that, but just forever. It seems like he's waiting up there. It seems like, oh, this is supposed to be his spot. He's going to jump off, but then no, they stop and they set up something else, and okay, now it's going to be the spot, and then it still kind of gets cut off, and then you have more weirdness on the end. So, like, I think having that, which was clearly a mistake or just poor planning on the fact that the you know, Teddy Hart's team is not going to care about the little details like that. It's just always not been his thing. He overlooks a lot of the small stuff that really is glaring for me. But yeah, you have that. Yeah, you have that, and then in the same match where the finish is both Dirty Blondes going up on opposite ends of the corners to then get cut off by Pero doing a Big Daddy Splash, and then the pin getting broken up as like kind of leading into the finish tumult, it does kind of make me go, God, like, you kind of shit on that by doing it earlier with Brian Pillman Jr. Like I said, it's, why was that enough for them to kick out Pero, but the Hart Foundation are all still on the same team? They're having just as many communication issues and awkward looking spots and stuff going on. So I thought that that did not help.
Technically their family.
Right. I guess you got a little bit of that, but I mean, you know, like I said, Pillman's the one who stands out the most, and he's not family.
I'm just playing devil's advocate here. I mean, honestly.
Yeah. And yeah. So to me, I'm just like, they looked good in that their spots all look good. And I think that they could, if they could smooth stuff out, they could be a good trios actually for like kind of the modern wrestling style of trios matches, which is, you know, basically like this hybrid of like Dragon Gate trios matches, basically, something along those lines they'd be able to pull off, I think, if they got there. But yeah, and then the, you know, Pero getting kicked out of the Dirty Blondes to me makes no fucking sense. It felt like once they finished the feud with the Lawler crew, that they, I don't know, they seemed rudderless and weird, but kicking out Pero doesn't make any sense to me at all, honestly. Seemed really out of nowhere. Which I know people don't like when they tease breakup stuff like that for too long, but this was not enough at all to me. I just really did not feel like it should have been built. But, I mean, the action for this, we talked about it with the War Games. I mean, this is obviously on the War Games show. They got the side-by-side rings. This is where this is being taped. And this trios match, yeah, I think if you had bolstered this out a little bit with a couple more guys, this match feels more like the match that would have done well in the War Games setting, just because of the kind of guys who are going to give you a lot more action. And that's what I think people expect from a match like that today. So, again, it's just, it's so glaringly right there that you know, this show, this everything is focusing on the wrong stuff.
And that leads us into a War Games recap. It's like, okay, we saw it, so you know what we thought about it. Then we get MJF and Aria Blake segment. What do you think about this?
I don't think that they have great charisma on camera together, but I know that this is blasphemy to a lot of people, but I really don't think that MJF is the best on the mic guy in the world that people think he is. He's good. He's got some poise. I actually think he's a better wrestler than he gets credit for as well, because people talk about him like basically he's, you know, all talk and no walk, and like,
see,
oh my God.
I think he's a good worker who's a good talker.
Yeah, but people say, like, people talk about him like he's the greatest talker in all of indie wrestling, and then on the other side of it, oh yeah, but his in-ring is worthless, it's dog shit. And I think he's more well-rounded than that, but I do also think that that plays into what I just said, which is that I don't think that he's the greatest promo going right now. But, you know, so, and that's not 100% him, I just think that they don't have they don't seem to have the great on-screen chemistry that they could.
Really don't. I mean, it feels like he's like Miz Light in a way.
Yeah,
and
I can see that.
I hate to say that because I'm a fan of MJF and I'm a fan of the Miz. I might want to point out, but like obviously Miz and Maryse have better chemistry than MJF and Aria Blake. And the fact that MJF is stuck in a fucking mid-card feud, comedy feud, there's the secondary belt. It makes the belt comedy with Joey Ryan. It's just, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't even want to start talking about the match.
I mean, yeah, MJF can work comedy, but he's better working angles with serious, with a serious edge to him, and he deserves better than doing that bullshit on national TV. What do you think about that? Do you think?
I'm with you. I mean, again, I feel like it's kind of like my catchphrase of this on this show, especially like if something works, then you know it's good. Like if I don't personally like it, but the crowd is into it, or people are saying that it's good, then like it's good, and it's not about my personal preferences. And MJF is a guy who I like. I just said is lauded as this amazing talker, so obviously he's good on the mic. He's gonna get over for you doing that. So when you have so few guys who are gonna be able to do that, why would you waste him in comedy bullshit? And yeah, I was like, I was gonna wait to get into talking about the match booking and all that, and the frustration that it gave me once we got to reviewing the match. But yeah, I mean, this is a fucking waste of MJF. It's a waste of everything. It plays back into what I was already talking about with Aria Blake and Janela, where you got Taya Valkyrie, and I don't think anybody who's watching this doesn't know that Taya Valkyrie and Johnny Mundo are a couple. And you got Johnny Mundo on, you know, in the other show, but then you got her tagging with Joey Ryan. And I mean, Taya, I don't know. I mean, I think she gets a lot of praise that she doesn't really deserve. I've seen her live many times. It's not like I get the star presence in person or something, and she flies off the page and feels like a larger-than-life star or something. Her stuff looks, honestly, even worse in person. I saw her have a match with Nicole Savoy that was, like, the strikes and the, like, kind of the grittiness and it feeling like a brawl was, like, impressively toned down for a Nicole Savoy match. So I have to 100% say that that was Taya Valkyrie, because I've seen Nicole Savoy dozens of times, and every fucking time her shit looks so good, you know. So yeah, I think it's just a huge waste to have MJF in that setting. He should be serious. He's got your mid card title, your middleweight belt. He should have a serious match that's building real stakes and actually getting people interested, because he could be a top money kind of guy for the indies right now.
Yep. Yeah, I'm looking kind of on the side of Valkyrie. I've seen her live a lot. Where I don't think she comes across as a megastar. The biggest time I thought she came across as a star was when she was teaming with Tessa Blanchard, and they played off each other brilliantly, and they came across as a really polished tag team.
Was that in Wrestle Circus?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I think I remember seeing that.
And yeah, they came across as like megastars together. But again, but you very rarely see them together. I mean, they have no real history together. But yeah, they played off each other wonderfully and stuff. They had a real sexy dynamic to them, which is a lot because I don't find either one of them super attractive. And that's not a knock; it's just not my type. But I thought they were incredibly sexy together when they were teaming up. So that's saying something. What did you talk about the match, man? It's MGF and Aria Blake versus Joey Ryan and Taya Valkyrie.
I mean, other than what I've already said, the only other thing of note was that Aria Blake was surprisingly proficient. I went into this thinking that she was much like Serena De La Renta. She's like some pet project of Quartz because he thinks that she's hot. And, you know, I've seen Aria Blake's social media presence quite a bit. And so I assume that she's just a model. Looks, that's all she's going to be, but she was in the right spots, no mistakes, no botches, nothing that looked overly terrible. Honestly, she looked pretty good for the most part in everything that she did. Obviously, MLW, I think that they did a good job here with just having it be intergender, but didn't beat you over the head with it, which I'd say comparatively to Lucha Underground, which, you know, you got Joey Ryan and Taya Valkyrie, history of them being in Lucha Underground. So the comparison is easily there. Plus the fact that, yeah, I think MLW did a better job presenting it intergender without just making such a big fucking deal about it. That I think that was part of the issue to me with Lucha Underground with the intergender. Like I can be okay with intergender myself, honestly, for the most part. But when they were like making it, we're so progressive for doing this, and then also trying to then at the same time that you're saying that, like, intentionally play off of stereotypes. Of man versus woman with like super aggressive man on woman violence that's like out of line for even the kind of action that you see in man, like a man versus man match. like intentionally turning it up so it looks even more disgusting, and playing off of like weird kind of rapey stuff with Marty the Moth and all that. So,
right.
Like they did such a terrible fucking job of it while also patting themselves on the back so hard for it. And MLW is just doing it and didn't really make a big deal of it. So I thought that was a good tick for the match as well, but it's a comedy bullshit tag or whatever. And so the standout to me was that Aria Blake didn't stink up the joint, you know, like that's kind of the level of what I thought of the match overall.
Yeah. You know, it's weird. And then we actually get something interesting. We have Janela return and he attacks MJF, but MJF is able to turn the table and knocks Janela down and runs off. But obviously that feud's not going to be going anywhere since Janela's injured. So they're teasing us something and it's not their fault. They're teasing us something that they're not going to be able to deliver on immediately. And I prefer the Janela MJF feud than MJF versus the Dallas Cowboys or whatever. I don't think Dallas Cowboys. I mean, MJF versus Joey Ryan in a comedy thing. So at least this has like a serious edge to it, but we're not going to get it. So they're going to have to reset that feud and see where that goes, or obviously script out of it.
Yeah, but I would be interested in MJF does Dallas. That does sound very interesting. So.
But I did get a kick out of how quickly Joe Janela attacks him, but MJF gets the upper hand and knocks him away and is able to run away. It felt really odd, the angle in that sense, you know, where finally Janela gets his hands on him, but he banana peels out of there. It was just, I don't know, it made Janela look like a bad baby face in a way.
Yeah, I mean, they've obviously, MLW has shown us, like, now twice in a row, really. I mean, it's on the same show, but whatever. They're very willing to sacrifice storyline continuity and even like just what comes across like competent booking in favor of like whatever little grudges they have against people for working in WWN. So
yeah, you know,
that's probably part of why that happened that way.
Agreed. Then we get a Callahan interview. You know, he's actually a good interview. But he becomes stale because it gets pretty... He does the same interview over and over again, you know?
Yeah, it feels like since he came...
down.
Yeah, that's literally the worst thing about his stuff. And I love that you pointed that out. Because when he was just doing the thumbs up, thumbs down, I thought it was stupid. But the fact that he fucking says it out loud is the just cringiest thing in all of wrestling. And yeah, it feels like since he came back to the indies, he's been doing the same promo over and over again. It doesn't help that if you actually, you know, take the time to watch all of the promo package bullshit on AAW shows, that he always gets a ton of time and cuts the same fucking promo over and over again. And it's so funny because he refers to himself as the draw, and you know, he did get that bump in popularity in some way that kind of all spurns from bashing Eddie Edwards in with a baseball bat. And it's just so funny to think that he's bragging about it and he's giving himself credit as being like a draw. And I think he probably thinks he's a better promo than literally anybody else does. And like his draw is based off of Freak Show. He's unsafe and, you know, going to go crazy and gets himself kicked out of bars and shows and does all this stuff. It's just so funny to think, 'cause for me, I'm always like a train wreck, a car crash. You know, people want to watch it, but I wouldn't really say that it's a top notch draw. You know what I mean? I wouldn't say that a train derailing is a draw. The same way that I would say that someone, you know, like Ric Flair cutting a promo, that's drawing people in. Dusty Rhodes, you know, same thing, cutting a promo, that's drawing people in.
Yeah.
You know? So, yeah, I just think that's so funny that he calls himself that.
Yeah. And then we get PCO versus Brody King in the main event. On paper, this sounds like a really great main event. But I felt PCO took way too much of the match. They didn't establish... In the booking, they kind of tried to establish with the non-finish that Brody King's at his level. But, I mean, PCO took most of the match. It felt very PCO playbook. a very formula, if you will. And then I didn't feel Brody King. It didn't feel like Brody King was his equal towards the end. And but I enjoyed it, but it just wasn't anything I could see my teeth into. This is like the form. This felt like this is the house show version of the PCO now. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, he is. It's easy to make those comparisons. He is a WWF worker, right? I mean, historically, and as I just listened to his interview with Stone Cold Steve Austin. The second part went up, I think, like a couple days ago or whatever. And he was talking about that, the kind of the house show loops and the paychecks and how everything worked and all that. And it is, you know, you got to remember that like even with his revitalization now, he's that same guy. So he does have that style, that time period, very formulaic. A lot of people had their matches that they did over and over again at the house shows, just to, you know how to get a pop from the crowd based off what you can do. So it's interesting because, you know, now I kind of wish I had seen the PWG match live, so I'd have that comparison to this. But based on it, I think that this felt probably better for the structure. To me, this match seemed like it. But from what I heard, the PWG match was more freak show, kind of big spots, craziness, and PCO almost killing himself. And just based on the way that it sounds, you know, I like the way that they use the moonsault here. As opposed to using it to almost kill yourself. Using it as the cap off of a big wild brawl and all that was cool and smart, I thought. But yeah, I'm with you. It felt like just getting by, and I don't think it helped Brody King. And I feel like they really should have done something to help Brody King here, because after the angle as the bounty hunter for Shane Strickland, it felt like they really devalued him with his booking since then. And he seemed like a guy that they could have actually got behind, at least in some way. So yeah, this was probably not the best booking for him, and really booking in general. But I feel like I'm saying that a lot as we review MLW shows, issues with the booking overall.
Yeah, up and down throughout the card, it's same thing. Like, they don't learn from anything. And we'll be talking about Black Label Pro. It seems like they didn't learn anything from their first Darkness tournament, where we had the same flaws in the main event as we had back then, first time around. Oy vey. Let's switch gears and head over to NXT here. This opens up with a Regal announcement, and he's interrupted by the Undisputed Era. I love Cole's reaction to Regal's announcement that he's getting you're going to get a title shot. You get your return bout, but in a triple threat. Cole played it well. It felt like Michael Hayes in Texas when Fritz of the NWA was going to throw a stiff at him. Like, yeah, you'll get carried, but in a cage. or something like that. And Hayes would play it big. And Adam Cole played it big here, and I really loved it. What were your thoughts?
Yeah, Adam Cole was fantastic there. It felt legit, like, with his reaction to it becoming a three-way, felt real. Not like just the wrestling trope of that, of course, the champion, or, you know, the guy who wants to skin the title, the heel, is going to be all upset that he has to wrestle two people, especially after he fucked them over and all that. It was good. But I do want to take this time, as you mentioned, Adam Cole and his star presence and everything here, to, I guess, officially toss the first salvo in what will become a podcast feud. Because it's been kind of bubbling under the surface, but on We Don't Know Wrestling, Sam has a new guest host, this guy named Bucky, who I don't know him, but they're reviewing all the early Evolves, and in the podcast just recently he was saying that Adam Cole, his hair is dog shit and he's ugly, and I'm going to argue, and I'm going to say officially my stance is that Adam Cole is a gorgeous man who has fantastic hair. So Bucky, me and you are beefing over how attractive Adam Cole is. That's official. So you better watch out.
I'll throw my hat in that. I wish I looked like Adam Cole.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, with Bucky, we might have to do a photo side-by-side.
Shot,
and we'd hate to have that happen. Oh, God. Yeah, if you're attacking Adam Cole's look, you better be a fucking supermodel.
Yeah,
that
exactly.
Man, that's the man. I mean, he's so pretty, he could be a girl. He'd be pretty as a girl. I mean, that's how handsome he is.
Yeah,
Yeah. Wow. Okay. Teach their own. Everyone has different tastes. let me just do a Gargano interview, which is kind of, they umbrella it by he's walking with his woman, little Candice LeRae, and leads into a Lacey Evans, Candice LeRae interaction type of thing segment. So I don't know, I thought it was kind of cool, but you know, I'm kind of played out on Johnny Gargano, and I don't give a shit about him wrestling Tony Nese at all. So, you know, is this going to be on NXT or is this going to be on 205? I don't know. Since Nese has been hanging out on 205, I mean, I don't know. I don't know what the implication is, because they don't really say where it's going to be taking place. What do you take away from all this?
Yeah, I mean, I haven't seen Nese in so long. I was actually confused for a second. I was like, I thought Johnny Gargano was just Nese. They renamed him when he came to NXT or something. You know, it's like, haven't seen the guy forever. But yeah, I'm not super excited for the two bland, dark, short-haired guys with abs to battle it out. You know, I mean, it'll be decent. I think I liked Nese more than most people. But he's not, you know, super interesting and exciting.
In the 80s, he would end up having a pose off, like Rick Rude in the Ultimate Warrior type thing.
Yeah, you know what? I mean, if, you know, Nese was taller and still looked at like he did, which is difficult when you get to that height, you know, he could be one of those kind of guys, you know, the muscle guys. Like, Ultimate Warrior is a great example. But, like, he also can do some cool stuff. I mean,
yeah, these guys are more built like Ravishing Rick Rude in a way.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. But yeah, I mean, don't care about that match. I think it's smart to do Gargano's promo this way, where he's walking. It's kind of the Sorkin kind of trick. What is it? The walksposition, where you do the West Wing. They would do like the long conversation sections of the show. They'd be walking down the halls and stuff. It adds action and interest to what's going on with Gargano being so cold right now. You don't want him just standing stationary in the ring, just kind of pushing it even over the top more, just how boring everything is. And then the Lacey Evans thing was good, but it's annoying because it felt like it goes into that trope of just fucking stereotypical women shit where Lacey Evans has to, on top of having an issue with Candice LeRae, she also has to make a pass at his man. You know, and then Candice gets upset that she goes to touch him, and then Candice turns around and huffs off. Oh, she's being ridiculous. You know, she's hysterical. Why can't she understand what's really, like, it's just too stereotypical of like crazy women, you know, which I guess, you know, you can say that, or I can say that, I just did. But then I guess the men in wrestling aren't portrayed as like the most mentally stable either.
True that. Then we get a Lars Sullivan video. I mean, again, he comes across as a megastar, right?
Yeah, I mean, he seems like a guy that should be, I mean, obviously they're building for something with him, but yeah, he should be championship level already, easily.
And that leads us into a Velveteen Dream segment. Dream, of course, again, looks like a star here, right?
Yeah, I mean, Dream is, I mean, he's another one. Not just championship level. Dream should probably be on main roster, but doing what? You know, where's his place? And that's the only thing that's scary, is that it doesn't feel like he fits in easily to what they want to, you know, the kind of box that WWE would put him in, where I think he can be a character guy, but he can also still be a star.
We then got... then we got the Velveteen Dream segment, and he is a star, right?
Yeah, no, easily.
Then we got a Lars Sullivan squash, and they bring EC3 out to make the save. I don't know, I'm not buying EC3 as a standing tall baby face. I just can't buy, he's just not, I can't buy that character for him, but even though they're going to try, you know, hopefully it works, but it's not working in my living room. What about you?
Yeah, it was tough for me to even buy into him fighting off Sullivan so easily, even with the sneak attack. I think he was smart to rip his shirt off, show off the physique, because that reminded me and made it a little bit more believable that he could out-muscle Lars Sullivan, you know. It feels like kind of the idea of trying to do the Hulk Hogan thing, where you put him up against giants, but he's just this freak, you know, super strong man. I mean, similar to Bruno, too, but he did it less than Hogan did and less cartoony. Yeah. Like this feels. but part of the problem is that even though EC3 is in great shape, to me, he doesn't look that strong, and he's not super tall. He's not short, but it's like Hogan was a lot of times as big as the guys that were presented as monster giants, you know?
Yeah.
So you overlook that is able to make him look bigger when it's time for him to be.
And Hogan has had so much more charisma than EC3.
Well, yeah, so. That goes without saying. I mean, geez.
So, yeah, role.
Ripping the shirt off, I think, helped get him over in that regard. And I liked the way Lars played it off in the end, because the smirk and the smile on his face really told me, like, oh, this guy, you know, he thinks he's doing such a great job, he's able to fight me off, but he had to jump me. And he, when I'm ready for him, I'm going to just destroy this guy, you know? And it just, I love that, because it had that confidence, and they're just like, oh, this little fucker, like, he thinks he got this big win here, he's so happy with himself, but it's coming to him. And I thought that menace and that look on Lars' face was money. That was fantastic.
Yep. Then we get a Regal interview with Nikki Cross, interrupts, and, you know, she wants to play with Bianca. You know, I think Regal likes doing these interviews with Nikki Cross, because I think he enjoys the extemporaneous rapport with her and stuff. What about you?
Yeah, and she was good here, but I think, yeah, he obviously likes playing off of big time characters, just in general, be it serious or especially be it comedic. So I think that Nikki Cross fits that, but here she didn't come across as silly as she has been recently, so I thought that was good. These two, they're good together.
Then we get the Mighty versus Street Profits, and the Mighty made the Street Profits look so good here. By far the best Street Profits match I think we've seen. And I think I said that last time they worked the Mighty. Really smart looking shine for this profit. Big dive was really nice by Ford. The interference sets up the heat. Mighty War we're great in carrying this. The ringside step spot with Montel Ford was, I thought, absolutely brilliant. I never saw that coming. I mean, I don't know if I've ever seen that spot. That's how brilliant it was, how camouflaged it was. And now I'm enjoying them working Ford's back and wheels on this. You see Montel Ford channeling Ricky Steamboat here. But let's be honest, he's no Ricky Steamboat. He doesn't have that baby face. I mean, he was shown fire, but he doesn't have that baby face fire and that baby face being able to connect to the audience type of thing. So it didn't quite work. But fun bout. All I can say was, yeah, fun bout that I gave it 3.5 stars. I thought the Mighty were fantastic in this. And, it's a shame that you have the Undisputed Era, because the Mighty are probably right up there with them as really great tag teams this year. Even though they've been hurt, they're back and they're hitting their stride right now. What were your thoughts here?
Yeah, I thought that the opening with the Mighty and the chain and the cup was good, just to play off of them, kind of just sticking it to fucking with the Street Profits. Real smarmy stuff. The shine for the Profits in the opening I thought was great, like you said. They looked gritty and that they were really in a fight with some people that had pissed them off. Heat segment from the Mighty was fantastic. You mentioned that as well. So yeah, I just thought the Mighty looked great here. Put together a really good match with the Street Profits, who held up their end of the bargain, but definitely, you know, like you said, channeling Ricky Steamboat, definitely didn't feel like top level stuff. They were there, they're in their spots, they're doing what they're supposed to, but they're missing the passion, missing the soul, and missing what can make you great, you know? It's just not quite there with those guys, especially not, I think, as a tag team. or at least as a tag team together.
Then we get pretty much the main event, which is not the main event. We get Kairi Sane versus Vanessa Bourne, which is pretty much a squash, right?
Yeah, good squash. Bourne looked okay. Kairi Sane's looking good as the champ, so keep building her up. You get Shayna coming out to continue that, which is nice.
Yep.
And we'll see where they go from there. But it's not feeling as much heat, and I think it's because, you know, this is a cliche thing to say, but I think Kairi was better in the chase, especially with Shayna as the big-time heel. And with the roles reversed, I don't think you get as much heat in the rivalry between the two.
Agreed. Then we get Keith Lee, Kona Reeves type of segment. I don't give a shit about Kona Reeves, so the segment was kind of flat for me. What about you? What do you think of it?
Yeah, I thought I heard people saying they're cutting bait on this finest Kona Reeves bullshit.
That's what I thought.
But I guess not. And he has this annoying segment with Keith Lee, who Keith Lee leaps off the page with just a cool swagger that you've never really seen. I've talked about it before, but his personality and the way that he comes across is not something that you've seen in wrestling before. Just, you know, I mean, Lando, right? Cooler than the other side of the pillow. The guy comes across like Billy Dee Williams kind of cool. So, you know, that's not really something that you've had in the history of wrestling, just because of wrestling's history of not necessarily having, you know, not that it's only a black guy kind of swagger, but it's predominantly that way. And so you haven't really had top guys who are presented with that kind of cool. Most of the time it's over the top a little bit more.
What'd you make of the main event of Ciampa versus Dosovic?
Dosovic, I thought, looked good. Real strong. Showed off a lot of great power spots. Ciampa's, you know, giving guy who's willing to do and take all kinds of stuff, even when his body is not, you know, not out of control, but he's not in control when he's getting spun around into a big body slam, you know. You're not taking control of that bump. My biggest issue with the match was I really didn't like Dozovic chasing him around to the outside. When Ciampa went to the outside and Dozer goes after him, really just felt, I don't know, there was something to it where I just really wish that there was a way that you could present a guy like Dozovic. I think is the perfect guy for it, to present him as a guy with his size and kind of lack of dexterity, I guess is a nice way to say it. He should not want to go out of the ring.
Right.
He should be like, you get in here and you fight me. Because that's where I'm going to, that's where I'm unstoppable. You can't move me around. I'm going to have my way with you. But when you get to the outside, he's opening himself up for stuff. And it just, I would love to have someone in wrestling be presented that way, as someone who is sure of themselves in the ring so much that they're not going to go outside. It doesn't feel like anybody has that. Everyone is just as comfortable brawling around the ring as they are inside the ring nowadays. And it's, styles make fights. I want people who are different. So having him just feel like another guy doing that felt like such a waste of his character, because he's being presented as something different to start, and then that just took me out of it once that happened. It's such a dumb little detail to care about, but it really did. It made me start questioning, oh, he's just another guy. He's, you know, there's nothing special about him. He's just like everyone else. Oh, Ciampa's going to beat him. And then, you know, he does the worm right after that, which is kind of stupid too, and like, I don't know, this match felt serious and like you could make something out of Dozovic coming out of this, but then you had that comedy stuff. I thought he did good selling, you know, big man selling, so not really over the top and really not taking a lot to give the upper hand to Ciampa, which was nice, because we have some other stuff that we're going to talk about later that doesn't feel the same way, which I appreciate that when it takes something. Yep. to actually have the tides turn. So yeah, I thought that this was a good, solid showing for Dozovic in this, but had the flaws that, you know, you're gonna expect. Love Tucker Knight coming out to back him up, stop Ciampa from taking off, but not getting involved in any negative way. And thought it was a good finish, which it played off of kind of what I was already saying before. The finish kind of still plays off of the fact that Dozovic was out of his element from being outside of the ring, and like I said, he's not the most nimble guy, so he gets caught trying to get back in and put down with that DDT, and it's over. So I thought, you know, all in all, really good stuff. Bodes well for Ciampa's reign, I think, that he's able to have a solid TV match like this with a guy like Dozovic. It's really interesting that coming out of the Gargano-Ciampa feud, I think everyone was thinking with Ciampa, or with Gargano having that great match with Almas, that he would be the big thing. But it feels like Ciampa's the one who's still got some juice coming out of this. He feels like he's actually got a path that he's moving forward with, basically feuding with everyone in NXT that's about fun. And he's there to kind of throw it back in the fans' faces and stuff. So it's kind of funny. It's like he's clearly got a defined purpose. He's still got some heat. He can move forward. Gargano feels like a husk who's just like blowing in the wind. And if him wrestling Tony Nese is just like the teaser to build into he's just going to 205 Live, that'll be so, so sad that a guy who had, you know, the back-to-back five-star matches that everyone was raving about then just gets lost in the 205 shuffle.
I'm with you completely on the match, and as a show, but I thought it looked clearly the match though highlighted Dozovic's strength, his knack for the comedy. They were able to keep that in. I don't know if it was a good opponent for Ciampa, the character of Ciampa anyway, but. You know, he's got to work other guys. He can't just work main event feuds the whole entire time. So he's gotta learn to work his gimmick with these type of styles of wrestlers and stuff. So I found it very interesting to look at. I'll tell you that much. But for me, the big thing standing coming out of this was TM the Mighty, how good they fucking are as a tag team, and how they outclassed everybody on this show, in my opinion. Any final thoughts on NXT?
No, just, yeah, I think I kind of hit everything with that, so I'm good on NXT for now.
Yeah, before we head over to Black Label Pro, is, you know, check out ProWrestlingOnly.com to explore other podcasts, along with match reviews, features, and retrospective reviews of wrestling books, video games, and matches, playlists, wrestler appearances in non-wrestling TV shows and movies and more. You can also join the conversation by signing up at Pro Wrestling Only forums. We've been online for over a decade and with over 2,000 registered members and an archive of over 4 million threads. Our message board is a vibrant community all its own, whether you want to talk about a specific match in our match discussion archive, take a deep dive in the Microscope forum, or discuss more general topics from wrestling past and present. Check all of them, this and more, at ProWrestlingOnly.com. Black Label Pro, Darkest Timeline. Interesting show. You know, I really don't have a lot to say on a lot of the matches.
Yeah,
because I was entertained for the most part, but I for the most part, none of the matches really had any real substance to me, except for a handful. I felt the final two matches of the show hurt the show, and that's not a good thing. Those things are supposed to deliver for you for the most part. I can understand the multi-tag match not doing it. And I mean, I understand they set that kind of up as filler. But the main event for the second year in a row on the payoff of this tournament, failing to reach expectation levels and having the same exact flaws, or I mean, I didn't rewatch the main event from last year's. But it feels like it's had a lot of the same freaking flaws, that it had, last year. What were your overall thoughts on the show?
Very similar. Entertaining. There was kind of a slog in the middle with all the multi-man matches. Well, I guess the two multi-man matches and the PCO Briggs match in the middle of that. That really felt like...
It's like they didn't learn either from last year. Like, yeah, we have some singles matches. Hey, we also have these three-man, six-man, five-man, multi-man matches. And it's like, what type of tournament is this? It's like, are they trying to be wink-wink funny? Or are they just that clueless when it comes to booking, honestly, because it's hard to, it's a tournament and you want to tell the story of the tournament, but you know, this would not happen on a Dylan Waco booked, Dylan Hale's book show. This would not happen on a Matt Griffin book show. It would be much more tighter, a lot more story. This would not happen on a Brad Stutz book show. So it's one of those things where it's like, if I booked, it wouldn't happen on a Pete Schumacher book show. Like, they didn't give us any real storyline for the most part in this tournament, and that just buried the main event at the end. I'm sorry, go on. I didn't mean to interrupt.
Yeah, no. I mean, you're hitting a lot of the same points that I have. I mean, you know, it's the biggest pet peeve of mine is tournaments that don't stay in the same format. I think that when I finally get tricked into doing my Money Mark book show that I put together and lose my house on, I'll try to pull off an all six man match tournament where every match is a six way. All the way into the finals will end in a one-on-one straight-up singles wrestling match with strict count-out enforced rules, no leaving the ring. You know, I mean, it's so weird to me that you do that. You put together this story I'm supposed to believe. But, I mean, this is another kind of common thread that's becoming in tournaments. I put some air quotes on that because it's like these shows that are a bunch of matches and then all the winners have a big match at the end, and that's a tournament. There's no bracket. It's not really even rounds. It's just you won a match. It's kind of like the, you know, the old kind of shitty carny ass shows where, you know, the first match we got you know, guy A versus guy B. Second match we got guy C versus guy D. Third match, guy A and guy C are a tag team against guy B and guy D. Now it's like that's what it really feels like. It's just you're using the same people from the show to stretch out the card a little bit by adding one more match. It doesn't feel like a tournament in any way, and it's intrinsically what you're talking about. There's no story, and that's the basis of a tournament that makes wrestling tournaments so good, is that there's a story that's intrinsic to the sports nature of professional wrestling in it, vis-a-vis it being an actual tournament format where wins and losses matter because you move forward. I mean, here, wins and losses are, you know, they feel like they're just like the flip of a coin. You win or you lose, and then you happen to go on to one more match. That's all that it is.
And then they even said it with Jordan Grace being out. They even made fun of the title they're now fighting over. So they kind of, you know, I get it being tongue-in-cheek. But, I mean, why bury the title you're putting this thing up for starters? And then you say, well, originally Swoggle and... Marco Stunt weren't part of the tournament, but they are, and you're like, and you're supposed to give a shit. There's a lot of promoters out there who like to put on wrestling shows. There's not a lot of good wrestling bookers that we've come to watch go through on these wrestling indies where we'll get some good matches, some good, bad, ugly, and it's usually the show are usually hurt by the booking of the show. Am I right?
Yeah, or lack thereof. I mean, this show or lack thereof. By the fact that you just threw a bunch of guys out there.
Yep, no constraints whatsoever, no check marks. But hey, let's get into it. And it opens up with Filthy Tom, Lawler versus Jake Parnell, the Warhorse. And this is a match, one of the matches I sunk my teeth into. Filthy Tom is one of my favorite guys going today on the indie scene. He's, you know, I can understand people how they love Riddle. I think Filthy Tom has a charisma. Not as big as Riddle's, but he still has a charisma to him. But I like Tom Lawler more as a wrestler. Because I'm more into the grappling, and Tom can deliver the grappling for us. That Riddle, really, he's more of the striker, big move type of thing. While Lawler has more subtleness to him than Matt Riddle did, and so I think the sky's the limit for a Filthy Tom. I'm wondering what he wants to do. I really enjoyed the stand-up fighting early on here. Balling Germans are really, Parnell, really nasty. Parnell nails him, nails up while there was one. Warhorse starts focusing on the back. Lawler after Warhorse's arm. Parnell sells the arm really well here. Lawler headbutting the arm. I thought it was really good. And I thought the finish here was great. I thought this was by far the best match on the show. I gave it 3 3/4. And you can really sink your teeth into what these guys were doing and where you can go with this. What were your thoughts, Tim?
3.5. Definitely best match on the show. You talk about Lawler and the charisma thing. He has a very different charisma than Riddle. And I think that Riddle's charisma speaks more to a wider audience. Riddle is the guy that you can have on SCI, and then the families with the kids and the moms and the dads all like him because he seems like a nice guy and all this. Lawler, I think, plays more to me and you. And not just me and you, but me and you types. Internet guys, you know, people who are really into wrestling in a hardcore way. And that group is bigger than it used to be. On top of that, he also does have some legit charisma. Like, his charisma is still there for the others, but I think that it's just who gravitates to him more. And then, you know, one of the many times that I felt like Dylan Hales was subtweeting me on podcasts, where he would talk about kind of the straw man argument against Riddle as a wrestler, being that a lot of people negatively judged Riddle for not wrestling the way that they wished that he did, based on who he was and his MMA and all this, and like kind of that put him in a deficit because he didn't wrestle like a UWFI inspired, you know, shoot style wrestler or something. And a lot of times, if you know, because that's, I mean, I can definitely see someone putting that on me, for especially for the way that I talked about Riddle. So when you talk about, you know, Lawler's grappling, that's part of it too. That's why I like him more personally than Riddle, is because he wrestles more like the way that I wish Riddle did. That's just kind of how it goes. But then he's also got, I love that, you know, the entrance here, he's coming out to Passion Pit. He's, you know, does it throughout the show where he's sleeping on the stage. He gets woken up by his second. And then he comes out, and it plays into that he's doing the go to sleep into, but instead of like a knee strike, he throws him off the fireman's carry into a sleeper hold. I just think that that's so fucking great. The stupid entrance, doing that as his storyline. It plays into the guy's attitude, and that's why I say he's more marketed to people like us, or maybe even people who are a little bit more kind of the board types, the people who are on the figure four board regularly kind of people. They're, you know, he's more their guy. Like I said, 3.5. Loved that. The grappling was perfect because him, Lawler, grappling more then opens up for Parnell to be the big striker, which he gets to show off here while selling super well, to really be underneath. Lawler comes across like the Terminator, very similar to Riddle in that, you know, he's the MMA background guy. He's gonna have the one-upsmanship on everyone because he's got that background as a cage fighter. But Parnell's got heart, and he keeps fighting, and he keeps coming at him with big strikes and big attacks when he can. The headbutt to the lariat was a perfect capper. Great finish, great match. Just, yeah, good. I mean, really, really great stuff. And so funny that they open up the show really with the best match of the night.
Yeah, I'm with you. Then that leads us to Kevin Q versus PB Smooth. James versus Rory Fox versus Alley Cat. Before we get into the match, do you know the whole backstory on Rory Fox and that MTV special?
Yeah, rapid delivery. Rory Fox from MTV. I Want to Be a Wrestler. Who was he getting? I'm trying to remember who he was getting trained by.
Les Thatcher. Aspen,
was it? Oh, it was Les Thatcher. Okay. Yeah. Yeah,
and that was the episode where they also had Tony Atlas and his foot fetish came out and stuff. And it was really interesting. I remember watching it live at the time. I mean, I'm sure it was tape delayed. I mean, there was no such thing as live MTV at the time. But, yeah, I remember it and stuff. And I always stood out because it's like, what a shitty gimmick name. Special Delivery Rory Fox and dressed him up as a mailman. Oh, my God. What did you think of this match?
I thought that, you know, this match was good for if it was the only kind of multi-person scramble thing. The kind of joke around in the beginning based around the fact that PB Smooth is big. Kevin Koo and Fox hit the floor and then kind of pretend to brawl, and they just kind of hang out and chill. I thought that that was great. and then, yeah, once this breaks down into like Spot Fest, it's a lot of fun. And once Kevin Koo, he has a way. Kevin Koo is very good in these settings. It sucks because I think he's better, obviously, in a single match setting. We've seen him have some great matches, but he's really figured out a way to finish these matches, these multi-person matches like this, super strong in a way that gets him over the most coming out of the match, even though a lot of times, I mean, I talked about him with the fake brawling with Fox on the floor, even though like a lot of times he actually does the least throughout the match, he's able to get the most out of the big finishes doing something crazy. And here he does that with just the sheer aggressiveness with which he slaps Alley Cat. And I kind of talked about that earlier with the issues with Lucha Undead or Lucha Underground. But, you know, it was a little egregious here. He was a little bit playing off of that, but it was viscerally very engaging. And so seeing him just murder Alley Cat with slaps did feel like he turned up the violence. And then after that, he's been doing this kind of half torture crab that just looks like pure death, and he kills Fox with that. And yeah, like I said, Kevin Koo's really good at doing this, popping in to just finish off these multi-man matches and come out looking like a big-time star. I gave this 2.5 stars.
Yeah, and then we went into another three-way with Dominic Greeny. Well, this is a different three-way. This is the other one of the five-man. This is a three-way.
Yeah.
Dominic Greeny versus... look at the notes, you can barely see it.
Jeremy Wyatt and Kobe Durst.
That's right. You know, I like the Durst-Greeny exchanges. It's all action. Fun little match. You know, but Jeremy Wyatt is a stud, and so is Dominic Greeny. I'd rather see that
so single Durst.
Match. Huh?
I said, so is Durst. I mean, here in Black Label Pro, he's been very good. Yeah,
but and I enjoy Durst, but if I'm pegging the three of them, he'd be the lesser of the three in my opinion. But here again, it's hard to have a three-way match because there's always somebody's got to take a bump and go outside. There's a lot of tropes you end up having to follow, and we saw it here. I give it 3 stars, nothing blow away-ish to me. It was just fun. Well, I felt a singles match here would have been awesome. What do you make of this?
Yeah, a singles match with any two of these three guys to me would have been good. I mean, I'm with you that Durst is probably the least of the three for myself, but I think that that's still unfair to overlook him. He is good, and I think especially he's been showing out in Black Label Pro specifically, and they're presenting him strong. And I mean, obviously he goes on to the tournament. Just three guys who I really like having just a match because it's a three-way and the dynamic is off and they don't get to do what brings them all to the dance. I mean, three kind of future blue chip kind of guys all in a lot very different ways. Jeremy Wyatt, a little bit older
at this point.
I was gonna say Wyatt's a little bit older for that. He's kind of more of a vet, but but still, I mean, good stuff. I gave it 2.75. I thought the Durst came out looking good. Like I said, I think that the presentation of Durst in Black Label Pro is done really well, and I hope that he can use that to propel himself a little bit more, because I think he's more talented than people realize.
Fair enough. This is a three-way, just didn't play well. Then we got on the previous match, I gave 2.5 on the five-way. Then we got PCO versus Josh Briggs. What do you think of this one, Tim?
I think they did a pretty good job selling the Haas fight action. Briggs has actually been moderately impressive at that for being someone who's not very good at being someone who excels in big man versus big man matches, which not all big men are able to. But then he does stuff like throw really just shittily whiffed bad big boots and stuff that's just like annoying. They spend a lot of time playing around with the choke slams. PCO again, I mean, not here, not as bad as MLW, but toned down Not a bad thing, personally. I don't think that that's terrible that he's not going wild, but it is, you can see the the kind of thought process for him when it's these matches that are not big showcase matches. They definitely have a certain pace that all kind of feel very similar. I gave it 1¾ star. I mean, there was some lumbering, there was some issues. It was not really much to it for me. There was a lot of, like I said, there's stuff from Briggs who that just looks like it couldn't crack an egg, and then there's stuff from PCO that looks like he's just completely out of control. Not in a reckless way, but just in a, like, he doesn't have the flexibility to keep up. I mean, he stumbles just getting up onto the ropes to pose at times, so the big moonsaults and stuff, just everything is a little shaky and a little scary at times. But he definitely still has the character and has the over, and, like, I hate to penalize his performances really much at all, because he's a star and he's got something that resonates. So there's something there, you know?
And then I'm with you. I gave it 2¼. And again, it felt like a PCO formula brawl, where it's, again, a lot of them are falling into that thing when it's not booked to be a kick-ass match, where it's just there, and that's what he kind of gives us, which is fair, because that's kind of how it's set up in the booking. Then we got Everett versus Bishop versus Doman Jr. versus Drake Wentz. What do you think?
Zachary
of this?
Wentz.
Zachary Wentz. Like, I'm Drake.
This was the last match in the slog of all slogs that I couldn't care about this match. Good action, no major fuck ups. Pillman comes out of it looking very good, but feels heelish.
His charisma, right?
Yeah, he's got charisma, and there's something there, and this is better than the way they present him in MLW. But when I talked about, I think the first Brian Pillman Jr. match we reviewed was in Black Label Pro against Joey Janela, he had really good underneath babyface stuff, and it feels like he wants to, or people want to present him as a heel now, and I think he'd be better off as a babyface. But he does have natural charisma. I think he can be a star. He's athletic enough. I think he's a guy that people should be paying attention to again. I think we said this last time too, or I said it with the Joey Janela match early on. But I think that he's getting overlooked a lot, and I think part of that is because the MLW stink. There's just so much bad stuff there. That's it. I gave it 2 stars. Good action. Everyone was good, but this was at a point where I just couldn't care really probably about anything because of the way that the show has been presented so far. Just a whole lot of nothing going on. Doesn't feel like anything matters. It's just, you know, fireworks.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, and I don't know about you. I've heard a lot of good things about the Black Label Pro shows, and to me they just seem like there, you know?
Yeah, and I don't know if you're hearing good things about the shows or just the excitement, because a lot of the stuff sounds okay on paper but then doesn't deliver. That's like kind of their biggest issue.
That's probably it then, because or this fits the lowest common denominator as a wrestling guy show, watching it, where it's just all, you know, shock and awe, where you get a bunch of, you know, the fireworks, but you don't, you know, there's no meat to it. And that's kind of what I'm feeling here. I'm with you again. Same thing. Good, fun match. I give it 3 stars. I enjoyed it for what it was. Then we got Marcus Stunnen and Swoggle. And I will say, I thought this was brilliantly worked. It was a comedy match that felt fresh. And not eventually, this match will probably be overdone, and will become stale as hell. Like, to me, like Joey Ryan's act. But here it worked brilliantly, because this is all new stuff, and it was fantastic, and it was fresh, a lot of fun, and you could tell they both enjoyed working with each other. And I laughed my whole entire time, and was smiling. I thought this was the second best match on the show. Because of how different and fresh it felt. I gave it 3¼ stars. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, lots of fun. Good action. I mean, Marco feels like just a little bit bigger than Swoggle, but it was nice because then Swoggle got to show off some power moves. Marco still did some crazy dives, and there's some good action. I mean, Swoggle honestly has shown that, in matches against other little people, he can actually put on some entertaining matches and stuff. So it's just funny he gets overlooked because, he is a comedy guy, but that's because most of the time he's a midget wrestling regular-sized people. So it's kind of hard to not be a comedy guy in that setting. That said, yeah, I thought that they really worked well with each other. Super awesome, super interesting, funny stuff. Just good stuff. I mean, great little reprieve in the middle of the show to get you back into it. And not one that I was going into expecting that much from. And I gave it 3 stars, so I really enjoyed it as well.
Then we got the new best friends versus the production versus the Space Profits. I give this 2 stars. Again, it was just their multi-man tag match, and it's just like pulling out of my misery. We've gotten so many of these today. It might have been the first female one, so it felt fresh, that aspect. But other than that, it did not feel fresh.
Yeah.
What about you? What'd you take here?
Yeah, I gave it 2.25. The only thing that I really like is the Space Pirates team. They're good as like the spotty baby faces, kind of like Young Bucks when they're good guys kind of match style. They're pretty good at that, and I think that they could get over with the crowd with their antics. So that kind of, I liked that a little bit.
Agreed. Then that leads us to this main event of Lawler versus Coup versus PCO versus Marco versus Pillman Jr. versus Cursed versus Dunst. I love Lawler, but my God, where can you find something for the guy? I mean, they were hiding everything to cheer this guy, and that hurt. I felt the eliminations were done way too quickly.
Yeah,
having the mom, choke out Marco. I mean, Lawler choking out Marco immediately. I mean, people wanted to get behind Marco, and you eliminate the guy that people want to get behind the most.
In a way that tries to make him feel like he's a joke.
Yep. A total shitty finish on that aspect. Other than that, I mean, I thought the eliminations went way too quick, so none of them mean anything.
Yeah.
I thought Lou's elimination was weak as hell. I was like, what the hell? He got pinned on that? Lawler versus Pero, at the main event was well done. And worked well. I gave that one 3.25, but this main event I gave a star to. I was so disappointed. What were your final takes?
I'm with you for the most part, but they won me back with the match between Lawler and Durst. I thought that they were so good together once it was just them. It does make everything else feel so fucking pointless. And like, why do it? Especially when you rush through the eliminations, you do, like you said, I think a booking decision that kind of in some ways can hurt your promotion when you got a guy who's popular and hot and you not only eliminate them quick, that's fine. Eliminate them quick. They eliminate PCO quick. They eliminate Kevin Koo quick. But you, like I said, did it in a dismissive way that seems like you're treating Marco Stunt like he's a joke, which I think then the crowd who feels like they like him and they want to get behind him as a new possible babyface star that they enjoy, it feels like you're throwing it in their face saying that they're wrong and saying that, no, he's not good. And that's not the kind of foment that you want to have between your promotion and your fan base. I don't think, personally. I don't think that you want to tell the crowd something like that. Then when it's a singles match, I thought that Kobe Durst looked amazing fighting from underneath, really showing a lot of heart. Lawler was great on top, again, being just so overbearing, super talented, super skilled, able to really, just take Durst apart. And then every time Durst gets some hope and some control, he cuts him off again. Just really easy to get behind the kid and really hope for him to win. Then when he pulls out the win, it's a nice cathartic feeling. Feels like he earned it. Feels big coming out of it. But yeah, if this had been a fucking just a singles match final of a real tournament, you cut out a lot of these guys, save yourself, you know, money on booking so many people, at least trans, and then have Tom Lawlor wrestle three singles matches and just pay him triple. You know, do the same for Kobe Durst and just have this be an 8-man singles tournament or something instead of fucking all these 16-person 8-ways and all this. I think you could have had this as a really cool final. But because you got that bullshit before it, it doesn't feel important. So I gave it 2¾ stars. I really like, because of just how much I liked what Kobe Durst and Lawler did here, but the rest of the match really hurt it quite a bit.
Yeah, I mean, they those guys saved this, and that, I had it at like in a negative range until those guys got it up to 2 stars for me. But by God, yeah, just bad. There's a lot of bad decisions that we got to deal with and live with, and that's the worst part, is they get to make the decisions, we got to follow them.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, overall, I mean, I don't know, thumbs up. I mean, thumbs in the middle, leaning towards a thumbs down, I'd say, for me, which is sad because I enjoyed it. But they need to, I mean, if you're going to book these talent, make the matches have some meat and consequences to them. Don't throw shit at a board and hope something sticks. That's just bad. And it's never successful. Anything you want to add, Tim?
No, that's it. Black Label Pro kind of circling the drain, I think. Not as good as it was early on. Hopefully they can figure something out there, but that's it from me.
Yep. Anything you want to plug?
No, just follow me on Twitter at Lucha Undead.
Yeah, follow me on Twitter at Tidings of Wrestling and WorldCast Wednesdays for World Class Championship Wrestling Reviews. Catch you later, and next week we'll probably talk some Nova Pro. Later. Whoa, oh, oh, oh!
Báilame como si fuera la última vez y enséñame ese pasito que no sé, un besito bien suavecito, bebé. Taki taki, taki taki rumba. Whoa, oh, 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 oh. I music, I flows. Báilame como si fuera la última vez y enséñame ese pasito que no sé, un besito bien suavecito, bebé. Taki taki, taki taki. Aquí. Prende los motores Kawasaki. En la discoteca Jenny llegaron los Anonaki. No le va el booty, sobresale de tu traje. No trajo pantisito pa' que el